Hey folks, Tyler from Being This Person here. This is an episode I did with a comedian I met, honestly, because we have a shared name, or very close. Like, if his first name wasn't spelled a little differently than normally is, we would be one letter off. We have received mail under each other's names. It was fantastic. But, like, once I found out he was in the comedy community, I had to meet him. So I, upon meeting him, I discovered this really insightful, down-to-earth, and kind of fascinating guy. I dug him, and I would encourage you to go see him if he's coming around. I will try and post a couple of dates on the around the time of this release, and I'll probably try and post a few here and there when I catch up with him. I do also want to plug his podcast. We do it partway through, but I want to plug his podcast. It's called The Brain Dumpster. It's a long form open conversation, and it was really fun. He invited me over after we recorded this, and I went and did that one too. So that wouldn't be a terrible one to start with, but there's another one with Mike McGowan, who was on this podcast. That's pretty fantastic. It happened just before Mike left town. Check out some of those. It's a fun conversation to listen to. That being said, folks, I would encourage you to subscribe, rate, and leave good reviews and ratings, of course, and on whatever podcast feed you get us through. It really does help other people find us. And the best way to get us out there is to tell a friend, not just about a friend about this podcast, but a friend about podcasts in general, because they're valuable. You clearly listen to them. Thank you very much for getting the word out. Help a person, point at the button on their phone and let them touch the button themselves and figure out how to do it. If you would like to interact with us, we are beingthisperson@gmail.com. That's all lowercase, all spelled correctly. If you know me, you know that's a thing. And no spaces. Beingthisperson@gmail.com. Also easily found on Facebook and as Being This Person. And we do have a website, beingthisperson.com, where you can get downloads, a little bit of information stuff. It's a slowly growing thing. And we do have a Twitter, or I have a Twitter. It is DONESTYLER, capitalize the D and the T. Basically, it's my name, only inverted, whatever Twitter does. But anyhow, find me at Donus Tyler on Twitter. I'm getting better at it. Other than that, thank you folks for listening. I appreciate it. And let's roll the theme music. So, first question, who are you?
Guess I'll start with my name, Tyler Jones.
Which I'm going to interrupt immediately on because it is, like I said, the closest I've ever known a person with my name, which is kind of cool.
Super close. It's crazy. I guess, who am I? I don't know. I'm 26, so I probably, like most 26-year-olds, if they're honest, I don't know. Like, most of the time, but I feel like I have a decent head on my shoulders, and I am responsible. Not that I'm, like a prude or anything, because I'm totally all about having a good time. But even if I'm going to be responsible, I like to be responsible about it.
I got my own guesses, but will you define it for yourself?
Well, me wanting to do something crazy would be I'm going to take a couple days off work and trip really hard at a concert or something, or go camping, something like that.
Okay.
I'm not a
reasonable,
crazy, a harder drug kind of guy. I haven't done a lot of experimenting in my life, and I'm totally down, cause I don't feel like I really have an addictive personality when it comes to that kind of stuff. I mean, like, alcoholism runs in my family.
You're 26 yet.
Yeah.
I would vote against methamphetamines and heroin.
Oh, yeah, I'm totally against those.
And really, those are the only ones I'm straight up against. I hear bad things about ICE, but I think that's just a different country's name for methamphetamines. Word. I'm not certain.
Like,
I'm also too old to research it.
I've done Molly a couple times, and I had good experiences on that, but it's not something it's kind of its own psychedelic in a way. Like, it's something... I like psychedelics because no matter how much I want to do them, it's still, like, months in between. Like, I'm never like, oh, I need a trip so hard for, like... I'm just like, I can get one out of the way, and I'm good for a while.
Well, and it teaches you for a bit.
Yeah. And I totally use it as, like, in a therapeutic way as much as, like, recreational.
Do you go in with a focus?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to stumble down. If you're cool stumbling down this path,
yeah, totally.
Down this
I'm
path.
Totally.
Because I have definitely done my time in that world. I'm not closed to the option any longer, but I think I've learned a lot of what I needed to learn.
Yeah.
For instance, Terrence McKenna, are you starting to read any of his,
yeah.
any of the stuff in the culture
I'm
yet?
Kind of like, I've just kind of scratched the surface on him. Because I've learned about him from podcasts, and I've listened to some of his talks that you can download, and he's, like, super interesting.
Okay, Psychedelic Salon
yeah.
is a podcast that's been going... It was one of the first podcasts I listened to, and that was probably 14 years ago. So he's been out there a lot, and he has probably the largest collection of Terrence McKenna talks out there.
Oh, word.
So listen and read. The man was brilliant, but... At one point in time, he kind of got his fill and minimized his psilocybin research at least. Stuck with his DMT research a little bit, but moved away from the psilocybin. And I do think that there is something to you eventually learn what you need to from a chemical in that world.
Yeah.
Getting there, especially when dealing with American society around you while doing so.
Yeah. That's why I'd like either with friends or at... I like the concert aspect because I can... like get comfortable on the hidden in plain sight aspect of being at a show. Plus I like a lot of, there's a lot of this experimental progressive, like metal kind of stuff with jazz influence. And there's a big group of them that all tour together. And I've kind of like, I'm seeing it as a young person, like catching bands that I know I'm going to, as long as they stay together, I know I'm going to be seeing like my whole life. Because it's, like, catching them when they're just starting to get big. And it's cool to, like, see that happening in my life right now.
Can you... I probably don't know any of these bands, but what are some of the names?
There's a band called Intervals. And it's, like, a solo guitar player who now, I think, has a full band touring with him. And it's really cool. Like, his first albums are more on the metal side, but then each album... like, it gets tastier and tastier with more, like, rock and pop influence, but still with the heaviness and the technicality. And then there's another guy called Pliny. He's from Australia.
I've heard that name.
Yeah, he's, like, one of my favorite guitar players ever. He's, like, I watch his videos online all the time, and, like, his technique is incredible, and he's, like, so... comfortable. It's like stand-up. I appreciate the people that are so good that they look infinitely comfortable, and that like helps the audience be that much more comfortable.
It does.
And at these shows, everybody in the audience is either probably a musician or just a big music fan, so at these shows it's like there's not even a lot of moshing that happens because everybody's just wanting so focused on like what's happening with the instruments and
so you say solo
the players.
Guitar player is that solo guitar player in like the Yngwie Malmsteen Buckethead kind of
yeah,
way, where there's
yeah.
not much for lyrics. It's mainly guitar.
Yeah, it's a lot of instrumental stuff. Yeah, and it's kind of the next like the up and coming people that are going to be the next like G3 kind of stuff and. One of the last tours I saw in Portland, it was Intervals, Nick Johnston, who's on the more, like, bluesy side, but still with that prog element. And then this other dude named Jason Richardson, who's way on the, like, hardcore, like, heavy aspect of it. But all of them, the show blended really well. And then all of them came out the end and... the bass player and drummer just kind of held a beat and they all just traded like traded fours and then like four bars, then eight bars, and just like one would get more shreddy than the last. It was so crazy.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
That's so good. That was when I was back when saxophone was my main instrument. And so, of course, you end up in the jazz world. And that was one of my favorite things about playing music was that trading fours, trading eights, trading 16s kind of thing. And then going back down to eights and then the fours and then twos and then ones and then harmonizing. It was just so fun.
Yeah.
Chasing each other.
I went to college for music for a little while, and I went down the jazz road because there's like you either kind of go down the classical or the jazz.
Right.
And I'd like the more like the improv aspect because there's not a ton of improv in classical music, I'd feel. No. And then jazz is all about like just putting the foundation of the song down and then just like seeing how much you can just like where fuck it up. Yeah. Yeah.
That's nice. I dig that actually. That's, so I was as we were talking off mic just before, you were talking about playing guitar and I was wondering if you were classically educated. So you can read music and everything then if you went to college for it.
I can read a little bit.
Is unfortunately.
Yeah. One thing I would recommend anybody listening, if you're going to go to college for music, if you don't know how to read, I would definitely at least familiarize yourself beforehand because I went in just as like, oh, I can play, I'll figure it out. And it was not the best experience I've ever had. And it kind of like discouraged me in a lot of ways, but I don't regret what I learned from it other than like the massive debt you incur while trying to go to college. Yeah.
You met my kid. We're doing that.
Yeah.
But... So is that part of that difficult relationship you were talking about? That
yeah,
because
I wasn't able to continue because of financial aid and then all the like overwhelming aspects of it. Because when you go to college for music, and I'm not like making excuses, I'm just like it's my own experience. Yeah. Like when you're going to school for music, you have to take the music theory, the main course. You have to take keyboard skills. Like, no matter what instrument you play, you've got to know how
to learn. Bang on a piano. Yeah.
And then you have to do...
That's why I know how to play piano.
Yeah. Then you have to do sight singing and ear training courses on top of your math, science. And then you have to take sometimes you'll have to take lessons, like private lessons.
Situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And those were some of the most...
In addition to, they don't care that you're a musician. You still have to have a PGE credit in there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and on the math, science, and like... So I have to do... You have to do all that homework. And you're learning another language. And music's one of the craziest languages. And...
It's math-based.
Yeah.
So it's like Hebrew. I understand Hebrew is kind of like music in that it's all numbers and math. I don't know enough about Hebrew to confirm or deny that.
I
know that music... Is math based.
Yeah, like I love the math aspect of it. It's just the language part that gets me. And then once you get into second year, you have to start kind of being familiar with how to arrange an orchestra, and you have to know like what keys the flutes play in, all the instruments, and it's deep. Like I respect anybody that can like bang that out and. 4 years or however long, because I definitely am not on that like cram mentality. I can't cram that kind of stuff. Like that's a long like process.
Well,
and
had you said if you'd maybe had some more of the music language down, the ability to read music consistently.
Yeah, because I don't
and understand the wording and all the little weird markings and such. It might have made it an easier thing because you wouldn't have been tackling that along with all these other things.
And I had only been playing music, playing guitar for about 2 years before I decided that I wanted to do that. So I was like, just very fresh and just like, oh, I'm going to do the right thing and go to college. And then, yeah, now there's many, many other outlets. Like you could take a couple years and try and like figure some stuff out before you go to school.
You're encouraging gap years, huh?
yeah, for sure.
I mean, I took a gap year, and that's what I did is I pursued a music thing because I had been playing saxophone since I was like fourth grade. So I had almost 9 years under my belt when I got to graduating high school. And then I got into this group called Up With People. And yeah, as long as he makes noise, we know he's breathing, and that's
cool.
Good. Anybody who listens to this is familiar with that. So it was called Up With People, and it was this global organization. So, for instance, in my cast of 150 people, there were 13 countries represented. So we were obviously super multilingual. We stayed in host families for every hour we spent on stage, which we did about a two-hour show in every city we went to.
Oh, cool.
For every hour we were on stage, we did community service work for 5 or 6 hours. We moved our own – we were our own roadies. We were our own stage people. We were our own performers. We were our own – all of it. And so I did take a gap year. And that's where my weird – because that ended up in a very weird, uncomfortable situation, much like it sounds like your college did, where I had a turnoff from music. And I came back to it. I was like, left the organization, came back, tried it. It just didn't sit in right. And then I sat down a saxophone, picked up a guitar a couple months later. But, I totally identify with that. I got turned off by the situation because this stuff was going on that was just too much. And then turning around and finding another avenue. This one currently being my favorite. But
podcasting is part of the reason I had the idea to go up on stage. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's why I wanted to start one, just because with stand-up, I feel more in debt to the art form because of what it's given me. I'm not I try not to think about it as myself as much as I can.
Not to brag on you, but you did win Eugene's Funniest this year.
I guess I did. That was a crazy night. That was really fun.
That's a pretty cool accolade if you're the funniest person in town this year. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. So I can see why you feel a debt.
Yeah.
To the art. How long have you been doing it?
I just hit 2 years, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But your podcast is relatively new.
Yeah.
So was it listening to podcasts that got you to be bold enough to talk, or gave you? How did that all work?
I've talked about it on my podcast a few times, and the more I think about it,
the Brain Dumpster.
Yeah, it's called Brain Dumpster, and I just wanted to start. Me and my buddy Dalton started it just because the first podcast I ever found was Getting Doug with High. Have you ever watched that? Yeah, and it.
I was mentioning my favorite podcaster, Will Anderson. He was on that. It causes a big stir in Australia.
The first one I watched was the one with Todd Glass and Sarah Silverman. And Sarah Silverman can't handle her weed very well. And Todd Glass, he handles it differently, but he's hilarious. And I was like, what the fuck is this shit? This is crazy. And then I watched the one with Jack Black, and he,
I have to check out.
I've never seen somebody handle weed that awkwardly. He got up on the chair backwards and was spinning around and he had his skateboard and he had to leave early.
Or is that Jack Black?
I feel you never know because he's a performer.
He's such a Belushi.
I saw Tenacious D live in Bend and it was one of the coolest concerts I've been to. It was super rad.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and it was the full band one
at the big amphitheater,
the Les Schwab Amphitheater. Yeah. So discovering that podcast, and then I think the next one I found is the Joe Rogan Experience, and that kind of led me down the path of finding. Now I have, I could go down the list of stuff I'm listening to right now. Obviously WTF.
Marin's all right. Rogan goes too long for me. Seriously, 3 hours. Although I did just listen to his one with Chuck Palahniuk.
Oh yeah, that was cool.
Oh, that one was brutally great. Mainly for Palahniuk and because Rogan sat back a little bit.
Yeah, I at the job I have, I'm able to listen to stuff all day, kind of at least in
That's
one ear. So
yep.
I'm all about. The longer form podcasts are more of my favorite because I love listening to especially the comedy conversations and learning, hearing comedians talk about their old days and the mistakes they made. And then I see it happening at where they were. I'm seeing the kind of the people making weird kind of mistakes. And I'm oh, if you listen to these guys and kind of take the information they have and kind of apply it to what's happening, I feel a lot of any of the success I've had so far, it's just because I show up and I, like, try really hard to be nice.
That's a lot of it. Yeah. Don't be a dick. And then all right, so after we do this, we're totally going to trade some podcast lists.
Okay. Cool. For sure.
I think this is awesome.
Yeah, and, like, Radiolab and Duncan Trussell's Family Hour. Have you heard of that?
I've not.
That's a good one.
Did you know Doug Carlin? Dan Carlin. Dan Hardcore History?
Yeah.
He lives here.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, that's a good one.
I got to get that guy.
History on Fire with Daniele Bolelli.
No.
I found out about him because of Rogan. He's, like, this cool Italian dude that, like, I was listening to one recently about the, I think it's, like, the 47 Ronin, because I really like the philosophy around, like, the Ronin.
What's the philosophy around
it's
the Ronin?
It's, like, a warrior that doesn't have any alliances to anything except their alliances in the moment is kind of what I've kind of gathered from what I've read so far.
You know, there's a movie. I think Keitel's in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Somebody like, if it's not Keitel, it's somebody like that.
Yeah. And because I'm not, like, in terms of, I don't know, like, countries and patriotism, I have, like, conflicting feelings about it, and I don't know, I think there's just so many people in the world now, it's kind of easy to do your own thing, and kind of, if you want to fly under the radar and just kind of do your own thing, you can do that.
Targaryen libertarian. So anyway,
dude, I'm all about the third party option. Like, I feel in terms of the election, if you think your vote counts, I'd like firmly believe no matter what third party you vote for, you should be voting for them to at least give somebody a fucking option. And, like, if you think your vote
counts, open the fucking world up a little bit.
And with how transparent everything is, even as just, like, a person that's not very political, how transparent, like, the fucked up shit that happens in the world is now, it's, like, hard not to believe that everything's just sunshine and rainbows.
It's so
shit's
bad,
like,
in the world that you don't even make jokes about it anymore. It's just its own joke now.
Yeah.
You can't even, it's hacky to even comment on the politics of the world right now. Because it's just insane. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I'm like, I just want to laugh, so I'm going to write some, like, I don't have very much political material at all. I have, like, a couple Trump jokes, but they're, like, silly and not, like, they're not really opinionated at all.
He puts himself out there.
Yeah.
Like, and now his jokes will work before and after his presidency.
And he's around so much, like, I don't want to have to say his name. Like,
right.
I don't care.
Although, I got to say, and I've said this before to other people, the fact that his name is Trump and what he's doing to the political climate in the world right now is just so perfectly scripted, I almost don't believe it's real. Like, I'm starting to think they're Truman Showing all of us.
It's bad writing.
It is. It's lazy fucking writing.
Like, fuck Kevin Spacey, but House of Cards was a goddamn good show. Like, I was into it.
And Louis got on stage last night or the night before.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. What the hell?
Yeah, I'm surprised it's this early, but also it's one of those things. I have a weird, I try not to have too strong of an opinion about somebody I don't know and have never met, and I don't know. I don't care if he did that shit. It's fucked up, and I don't understand that mindset at all of wanting to, like, jerk off in front of somebody that doesn't want to, because I'm all about, like, it's only as fun for me as it is for you, so if we're, like, having the same amount of fun, that's good. Like, I've no, like, inkling in my body to make, like, shit awkward like that. That's so,
right?
It's so out of my thought process. And, I mean, apparently the crowd loved it, so the crowd's going to speak for whatever. I don't know. You can't.
Well, all right, so here's my question. And it's not the next question, unfortunately. We're going to get there eventually. I've talked about this a number of times. Does their behavior that we've found out about, in this case, Louis, or Cosby, or Mel Brooks, or, like, any of them, right? Does their behavior disqualify their body of work? And in my opinion, actually, no, I'll let you give your opinion first, and then I'll.
It's weird. Like, it's not happening now, but it needs to be, like, a case-by-case thing. And I'm not going to pretend that it doesn't need to be that way, but I'm also not going to pretend that I know what the line is, because I'm not going to even say that I do. But obviously Cosby's, like, fucked up, and, like, mm-hmm. he should, like, the death penalty is, like, too good. Like, he's got to, I don't know.
They're letting him go.
Well, I know, like...
Just can't even believe it.
If you have Bill Cosby money, I can't even imagine. Like, that's the thing about the world. If you got the scratch, it's not going to be that bad for you. And...
Unfortunate truth.
I don't know. And it upsets me how much talk... It's weird. Everybody wants to, like, not buy, like, the bullshit of celebrities. Meanwhile, they're, like... All they talk about is celebrities. Like, you don't see anti-war stuff anymore. You don't see, like, anti-prison industrial complex kind of shit. And, like, if you're a feminist, do you know how many women are locked up, like, for fucked up dumb reasons? Like, yeah. Petty drug
locked
charges?
Locked up in states where they have legalized weed and for weed offenses.
At a prison that's for profit and has contracts with the government to keep, like, 95% occupancy.
Somebody, let's figure this out.
Like, that's why I'm like, I don't... Louis is going to do whatever the fuck he's going to do, and I have no influence over him, so I'm not going to pretend like I have a strong opinion about it.
Can you still laugh at his jokes? His old jokes?
I mean...
And all the cases I have are his, so I would throw her in, but I'm not going to throw her under the bus, because I don't know of any female stuck in this situation right now.
Yeah. I mean... Well,
which makes me happy.
I don't really have, like, a desire to go watch his shit. I'm not like, oh, I'm going to go watch Louis C.K. because you're not supposed to now. Like, I don't... There's plenty of new stand-up you can watch. It's not...
But you have watched him, and he was a master of the craft.
No, I saw him in February. Like, I saw one of his, like...
Just before the crash.
Just before the 2017 special came out. Like, I saw that tour. And, yeah, that was before all that shit came out. And I had a good time at the show. I'm not going to say that I didn't, because it was in the past and I didn't know that information. But if I had known, I would have been like, and I got a free ticket.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, because my friend's girlfriend couldn't go. So he's like, hey, you want to fucking go see Louis? I was like, fuck, yeah, I want to go see Louis. And like Joe List and I can't remember the girl's name, and Todd Glass opened up for him. So it was like, it was a good show.
That's a great lineup.
Yeah, and like... Yeah, I just, there's, like, Louis is going to do what he's going to do. I have no influence over him. I mean, if, I don't think fucked up people should...
I don't know that I'm going to support him from here on out.
No, I'm not going to, like, buy his shit. I have no desire. Like, I have, there's plenty of other comedians that I like.
I don't get my dollars anymore. There's too many other good people that are doing decent things. They can't all be Patton Oswalt, but a lot of them can.
Yeah, for sure. You know? And, like, I hope these people get weeded out and... Because that opens up the door for new comedians that aren't fucking weirdos to
get in.
And
not just comedians. It's changing the cinema industry and everything. Like, let's get some of this mess out of the way.
Like, I've heard the conspiracies about, like, the pedophilia in Hollywood. I believe it. Like,
yeah. It's hard not to believe.
I have this... It's not really a theory. It's just, like, the desire for power, once you have all the money... And all the power, and you're, like, still unhappy, and you're like, what's the next thing I could do to up the ante? Like, fucking a kid is, like, the highest pinnacle of, like, the most fucked up shit you can do once you have all the money and all the power.
God, if iTunes would let me, I might make that the subtitle, but they won't.
No, it's weird, and I totally
creepy.
Believe
it. It is creepy.
Even just the amount of people that I know that have had... I'm a very fortunate person because I have skated through life without any weird sexual shit happening to me. But most, like, majority of people you meet, like, if you get to know them well, like, some shit might, like, weird probably happened to them when they were younger. And it's fucked up how often it is. And, like, that's why I have a problem with people wanting to shut down what people want to talk about, because that's why sex is so fucked up in the first place, is because it's been repressed for so long. And now that there's a sexual revolution happening, which is cool.
And a revolution of sexuality.
Yeah.
Like, how you even identify is changing. And that's kind of awesome to
watch.
It's
kind of like at its tidal wave peak right now, because there's...
No, I think it's still growing.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean,
but I think it's cool because it's only been the last couple years that I've even, like, really given any thought to my own sexuality. So it's and I, my partner is like on the path to being a sex educator. So like, I've only recently even like thought about that kind of shit at all.
So you guys talk about that a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go on to the next question.
Okay. Yeah.
We're,
whatever.
We're deep in. We're deep. This is probably going to run a little long. We're having a horrible time. So the next question, which we've started to touch on a little bit and may lead us right back to where we were actually, is now that we've talked about who you are, the question is why? But so I guess I get to ask my question now. See, why? Why are you who you are?
I just want to like hang out and have a good time, and that might sound cliche, but like I love working hard, and like comedy is the most consistent I've ever been in my life. I started recording my sets about 6 months in.
And you record every set?
I record probably like, I miss a few here and there, but it's probably like, I would say 90, 95%. I record all my sets. Like I just hit like my 300th recorded set. And in my first year, I probably did about 100 sets. And then in this second year, I've done over 200. And it's crazy to think on average, I do like comedy 2 out of every 3 days.
That makes me a little bit more excited. Thank you again for having space in your week then.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'd want everybody in the comedy, art, podcast, whatever you do community to get better. And I think it's cool that we can have like things like this to connect people that maybe normally wouldn't have had a conversation before.
It is, well, or heard the conversation.
Yeah,
or,
yeah, and I've, like, awesome. Fallen in love with pod. Like, man, I'll watch comedy specials on Netflix, and I listen to podcasts. That's, like, the main things I do now.
If I hadn't gotten myself into this loop of buying stereo equipment, I probably wouldn't listen to as much music as I do. But, you know, a loop of buying stereo equipment causes you to buy media. So oh, yeah, now you've got new records to listen to all the time or whatever. And
yeah, but I'm always for that, on, like, the hunt for new music. I'm
new
such
music
a, like,
is so good. I'm buying a lot of old music. What is, I mean, so what's your musical background?
The first concert I ever saw was Metallica Summer Sanitarium in, like, 2004 at the Seahawks Stadium in Seattle, whatever.
I don't whatever know that big-ass, yeah. I think yeah. It's a dome thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that one.
And that was cool. And then, like, Metallica and guys like Randy Rhoads, it's kind of why I started playing guitar.
But Randy died long before you were even into music.
I'm a huge Ozzy fan, and like Black Sabbath, Megadeth, Metallica, like all that, Anthrax.
You got me in everything except for Metallica. Those guys are assholes. But
I don't know. The only tattoo I have is a Metallica tattoo, so I'm hoping they don't get fucking some like weird political shit happens to them to where.
Oh, it already happened, man. The whole Napster argument was a weird political shit.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't know. It's kind of, if you're already rich and like, I don't know. Nowadays, it's completely changed. Like, you kind of have to be an artist, you have to be putting something out for free to people to want to connect with you. And I think it's positive because I like doing a podcast. I like putting out stuff for free. I like helping the comedy scene grow by performing for free. Like, I know this is just part of what I have to do, and I like doing it so far, so.
Well.
But if you're, like, making music, in terms of music, it's, like, it sucks that you have to, like, give your music away for free, and then. But now there's a lot of independent artists, because you make money more off touring anyway, yes. So if you give your music away for free, people are more inclined to see you tour. Like, there's this rapper named Token, and he gave his album away for free, and he's only, like, 18 or 19, and he, like, has some of the craziest raps and like the really emotionally mature lyric content, which is cool for like somebody. And
especially somebody who's still qualifiably a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and anytime like he's going to come around, I'll definitely go to the shows. Like I'm always hunting for like these new up and coming artists that are like pushing the boundaries. Like I've only gotten into rap recently and I've, like, not a fan of the new, like, mumbly kind of stuff.
Stuff is a phase. It'll pass.
Yeah, and I...
But some of the underground stuff is really pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and so...
You touched on two things.
Oh, and then jazz, too. I've, like, got a lot of exposure to jazz from going to school, so... I like, Dave Brubeck and, like, Charlie Parker, those kind of guys, yeah.
Yes. Sonny Rollins is a personal favorite. Check him out. Thelonious Monk, also. But these are still big names, but really great ones. Want some more interesting experimental stuff. Jan Gabarek out of Norway is amazing. But we can trade records too later.
Yeah.
But, so anyhow, you touched on two things that I got you around, because the first one you started with, I was starting to disagree with, and I wanted to see where the conversation went. But then you brought it around, and so what I wanted to do is paraphrase it, in that you said it's really kind of crappy that you have to give your music away for free, which I totally agree with. And it's not just your music; it's your artwork.
Because I know how much work goes into producing music, right. And that's. Like, I'm just on the scratching the surface of audio engineering, and it's, like, daunting, and the amount of shit you have to learn is
ridiculous.
Well,
and we were talking about, like, the escalating curve of learning how to get a podcast on the internet.
But once you hit a stride where you can kind of, like, mainstream how you save things and upload, it gets easier.
Yep, build a system, do it the same way, and it becomes rote. But either way, it's still that upturn of lessons.
Have I answered the why question yet?
We're working on
it. Okay, cool.
That's how this goes.
Cool.
I agree that it's shitty that you have to give away your stuff for free, but it's kind of glorious at the same time. And that's kind of where you got to as well, is that it's causing all this new stuff to be there, because everybody has to do it for, even the people that used to get paid are releasing stuff for free. Like Madonna is releasing free albums. Trent Reznor is releasing free albums. Like, people have been in the industry forever and putting it out there for free. And so it's causing this renaissance.
I think it's really weeding out the people that aren't that dedicated. And it, like, weeds, I think, like stand-up comedy, you really, to get on stage and, like, accept the fact that some of the stuff you say isn't going to be funny, like, it really checks your ego. And I feel like I played in bands for a while, and there's a ton of ego involved in that. And I think giving away your music for free is helps with the ego thing, as much as it sucks that you're, like, putting your heart and soul in something and then you have to give it away for free, hoping that you'll, like, get on a tour or something.
Well, and we're starting
to get
to the point.
But now you can tour independently with just, like, a manager or whatever.
Right.
And you can sell out around the country and make a living.
At decent-sized venues, nonetheless.
Yeah, I think people say, like, how convoluted and, like, how muddy the waters are in terms of art, but that's how it's been always, and if the cream always rises to the top, and if you're... It seems like the people that stick around are the people that might make
that
it one day.
Give a shit, yeah.
Because who's left after 20 years? The people that kept doing it, and they're going to be that good because I have that much experience. Like, I really like the fact that stand-up is going to be a long process. Like, I'm excited about the fact that when I'm 35, if I keep this up, I'll have been doing stand-up for 10 years, and I'll be, like, kind of in the prime of my life. And I'll be at, like, a decent
point. Well, and classically, from listening to comedians talk through podcasts and such, come that point in time, you're going to look back at your work now and go,
yeah, it's going to, I'm going to hate it. I'm excited to hate it.
Right?
I'm like, oh, what am I going to be talking about then?
Right.
Because I'm, like, so far I've gotten to do one show in California, so stand-up's allowed me to travel at least a little bit, and I've done, like, shows in, like, Medford and Bend. I graduated from Redmond High School, so I have I have a crew in Central Oregon, so I can draw a little bit of a crowd, so that kind of helps.
That always
you get
feels
booked.
Good.
Yeah.
You always feel good.
I've had...
Well, and not to mention, like, getting somebody to come up to the club and say, hey, I'd love to see this guy, is the way the club's going to call you.
And I've gotten gigs because, like, people see how much I show up, and I've gotten on, like, shows that I was really excited about because somebody put in a good word for me because they needed somebody at the last minute or whatever. And that, like, feels good to have people that, like, not that I'm, like, it almost doesn't really feel like hard work because I'm doing it because I love it. Like, it's just so natural.
If you make your work play, you will not work a day in your life.
And I know I'm going to eventually, like, I know the, like, business aspect is going to come in more and more as, like, I progress. But, like, I love it so much. I'm like, I'll fucking deal with it. It's something you have to deal with anyway.
What's your next upturn in learning is, like, how do I work QuickBooks?
Yeah. Or how do I deal with, like, people trying to fuck me over one day? Like, that kind of shit.
Oh, man.
That happens. We were talking about that Polynuk thing. Like millions of dollars. So what about your background? Like, only child, one of many?
I'm an only child.
You're an only child?
Yeah. My parents are still together.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's crazy. They.
It's America nowadays. Holy cow.
Yeah. I have a pretty small family, and it's gotten a lot smaller over the last couple years. I had my grandfather passed away, and there was, like, step-family connecting, and, like, just to put this out there, anybody that has step-family, if you, like, have questions about the way they feel about just whatever, you're not going to know how they feel about you until the person, like, connecting the families passes away, and then people are going to, like, they'll show their cards.
Offload their shit.
Like, it's fucked up. It's sad. Yeah. But that, and
it's kind of glorious, though, because then you actually get to figure the whole thing out.
Yeah. I'm like,
right?
Cool, thank you for showing me that you're somebody who's deceptive, and now I don't have to talk to you anymore. So that's, it's fine with me. There's like too much, I'm about weeding out bullshit in my life. And then, yeah, and it's kind of one of the motivators of me getting on stage. My grandpa passed away from lung cancer. Like, it was, like, 6 months after he retired, and he, like, had a decent job and, like, worked his life. They had a, like, pretty good-sized house, and they had a nice living, and then he retires, and then he probably has all these plans of stuff that he wants to do now that he's retired, and then he fucking gets the diagnosis, and then, like, lung cancer gets you quick.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, if I'm going to work my entire life for something, like, I might as well have it be the thing that I actually want to do, because I've seen you're going to die anyway.
Are working, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to happen anyway, so it's like, what do you really want to do? And I'm fortunate enough to live in America where, like, doing what you want to do is an option if you're willing to fight for it, so.
Well, and fighting for it means, in both of our cases, working a day job.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I work a day job so that I can support, exactly, so that I can support my hobbies and the things that I enjoy and the artistic pursuits that I like to do and allow myself to do whatever that is. It is fighting for it in that respect, I think.
And then on that same kind of vein in terms of, like, finding podcasting, and then I have a special that kind of stands out that, like, I think gave me the spark of, like, oh, maybe this is something I could actually go try out one day, was a Mark Maron's Thinky Pain special. Hmm. I don't know. It's on Netflix, I think, if it still is.
I've seen most of his shows, yeah.
And it's not a lot of background. It's a kind of a smaller club, it looks like. And, like, the stories he tells are just so good, and it's, like, one of his more recent specials. Like, I didn't realize, like, how much crazier he was when he was younger and all that stuff. And
he was a madman.
Yeah. And, like, just the way he tells stories, and you're like, dude, I'd, like, when you're that comfortable on stage, like, I want to, you're like, fuck, I want to, like, hang out with that guy. Or, like, right. I like the way that he thinks about things. And then you're kind of like, oh, how can I kind of, like, I feel like I have this new, like, radio station in my head that's, like, the comedy frequency that it's almost like a netting or, like, another vision over my eyes where I'm just constantly, like, thinking if there's, like, a joke or, like, that's always an aspect of the way I think now, and it's helped me overcome, like, a lot of depression and that kind of stuff. It's, like, stand-up's been also, like, really good for my mental health in a way, which I didn't expect.
You strike me as somebody who I identify with, because, I mean, we're wearing similar clothing and everything. I mean, this is literally my work costume, but this is, like, my all-the-time costume,
yeah.
And it's not too far from yours. You strike me as somebody who struggles with your mental situation a little bit, and I do believe that laughter is kind of the best.
That's how my family's
cure
dealt with,
for that.
Like, sad, fucked-up shit my entire life is, like, just making jokes. And my parents are, like, partiers, so obviously partying, you're trying to have a good time. And, like, part of partying is laughing, so. Yeah, and that's, and I have no problem with, like, darker humor. Like, a lot of my best jokes have come from, like, probably the most real, like, dark places. And I think it's hilarious, even if, Like, some people get awkwarded out by it, I guess, but
that's in my opinion, part of what makes people laugh in that situation.
Yeah, because it's like,
you make it so awkward that they can't even react in another way.
The uncomfortable laughter sometimes is the best. And another one of those things, like, you gotta, like, darkness isn't bad. It's not anything. It's part of balance. Like, and also, I think about my own mortality a lot, to the point where I'm, like, pretty comfortable with the fact that I'm going to die. I think about it a lot. Like, obviously, if I had, like, a gun to my head or I was being robbed or something, I would be,
thinking about it a whole different way.
I would be terrified, but in terms of just day-to-day life, that's not something that scares me.
Are you in any way religious? I take no offense to any beliefs.
I've been, like, really against religion in the past, but now I'm, like, I'm interested in, like, all the religions for the lore aspect of it now, as something, like, I play a lot of RPGs, and in these worlds, there will be, like, religions built inside them, and you'll be able to, like, read stories about their religions.
That's kind of the cool things they're teaching us without us knowing they're teaching
us,
yeah.
That I'm older, I can look at the world that way, and that's, like, super nerdy, but it's how it makes me make it fun, so I'm, like, I'm totally interested in. Like, I got some letter in the mail. I didn't know there was a Buddhist temple in Eugene, but I got some newsletter. They're doing some, like, kind of gathering thing, and I didn't end up checking it out, but it's planted a seed. Like, I'm totally interested in Buddhism, and I would love to go check that kind of stuff out.
A lot of people may be against the Baha'i faith, but I think they're kind of cool.
I don't know anything about that.
They're a largely accepting group of people, but there's a Baha'i church in town that's been doing a lot of advertising, which when a church is advertising, that's never a good sign, so I'm going to throw that out there. But there's lots of opportunities, especially in this town, to pursue all kinds of different religions and thought processes and psychological approaches and all of that is entailing and then fills up. So you clearly don't come from a religious background. It's just starting to spark in you a little bit.
Yeah, just the fascination of, like, how it's such a big influence in the world and how I can, like, pretty easily, like, not give a shit about it. I think that's interesting.
Well, it's like studying history. I didn't know I was supposed to care until I started seeing it happen
again.
And
I found a massive fascination for history also in that aspect, and how little people want to think they know everything, but will not know anything about history, because I've, like, fallen victim to that too. I'm, like, 26. So if you're, like, really putting anything I say, like, on some kind of, like, any kind of evaluation, like, nobody, who wants to hear what a 26-year-old has to say?
Sometimes, oddly enough, somebody who's 80, just so they can feel young again.
Cool. Yeah. And if,
like, because they've got shit much more figured out then. And sometimes it's somebody who's 15 because they want to know what it's going to look like later. Or I mean, even without throw years.
Yeah, it might sound like super, whatever, you can call me crazy, but I think psychedelics has, like, strengthened, like, my mentality in a weird way, because of how
it steals your persona. I will agree. Yeah.
And it's, like, made me more compassionate as a person, because every time I'm tripping, at one point I'll be thinking about, like, friends that I should probably call and tell them that I love them. And, like, cause, like, I've had a couple friends pass away in the last year, and that is, like, a really surreal experience.
Self-inflicted.
One of them was a suicide. The other one
was, you're of an age where that happens.
Yeah. And the other one was a at work accident. On the owner's negligence, so that's super, it's really fucked up.
That's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I appreciate the person that didn't choose it.
Yeah.
But it kind of makes it a little bit more brutal to me through my eyes. And that's a pretty dark look at the world.
And in terms of suicide, people that say it's, like, the coward's way out or whatever, I totally don't believe that at all, because I knew this person very well, and they were not a coward at all. It just sometimes you're, like, shit's not wired right and you don't want to be here, and that should be fine as an option. And, like, in terms of when you're asking me about death, I think it's eventually going to be, it's going to be, like, an important conversation that you need to have with somebody that you're nervous about having, but then you have the conversation and then everything's fine and you're like, oh, what was I worried about in the first place? I'm going to assume death is like that.
The uncomfortable conversation?
Yeah, but then once it's over, you're like, oh, why was I worried? I mean, or it'll be nothing.
Or it'll be nothing. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Because it's just a fucking cosmic accident anyway.
Yeah. And the fact that I'm even existing as a human on this Earth, when as far as we can see out into space, there's still not a lot of life around. So I try to, like, appreciate things on, like, a cosmic level as much as if, like, if you want to say anything religious, I think about space and how fucking crazy that is more than, like, that's fucking space is God.
Clearly something bigger than me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to hit this pause button real quick.
Cool.
So since I don't exactly remember where we are, it doesn't matter much because this is all fluid. Let's ask the next question. What makes you unique?
I'm not a super fan of that word.
I'm not a fan of the wording. And if you listen to the early episodes, yeah. I bitch about it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of just what I see socially, I think what makes me unique, I should be super passionate about things that I can't change, and I am in certain aspects, but I don't want to, like, regret anything on my deathbed, and I'm, like, trying to think about that at an early age. And, like, I know...
Good advice to give yourself.
I can't change politics, I can't stop bad people from making art, I can't... Like, I'm a good person, I try to be a good person, and I think try is a weird word, because I'm not, like, a bad person trying to be a good person, I'm damaged, and I'm trying to be good, because...
Or poorly trained, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, there's some shit that wasn't handed to me, and I'm trying to use my intellect to gain those tools.
And I do think I have a good head on my shoulders in terms of, I really try to think about the things that I do, and... I don't know, I'm just also trying to have a good time. I'm not trying to, like, hurt anybody or fuck anybody over because I want to, like, hang out and get to know as many cool people as I can because they're far and few between, so you gotta weed them out.
You gotta suss them out, yeah. You gotta walk through the mud and find the good stones.
And people that I have made connections with even, like, pretty recently, like, you never know when you'll meet somebody that'll, like, teach you a lot about yourself or, like, you'll see the way somebody lives their life and you're like, okay, you can live your life that way. And what do I like about the way they're living their life that I want to, it's like influence everything. You want to take a little bit here, a little bit there, like the stuff that you like about all the aspects of life. That is what makes you who you are. And I feel like I do things cause I'm genuinely trying to enjoy it. I'm not thinking about what other people are thinking about me. Even I am somebody that, I'm sure we all make the mistake of like, oh no, what are people going to think about what I'm doing right now? But the people that don't think about that, and like, I know I don't have any like ill will in my heart for like just anything in general that I'm going to follow my like vision of a vision, whatever that is. And I know I'm going to make mistakes and like everybody makes mistakes and we shouldn't forget that. And that's not a, like a weird defense of Louis, by the way. I'm just going to put that out there. I know how that...
Callback.
That sounds I'm being vague,
I think we'd successfully rolled far enough past, but good disclaimer.
Yeah. Like,
so when you said we shouldn't forget that, do you mean specifically the grandiose we, or do you also mean the internal we?
It's both, because I've definitely been... I'm self-critical, but I also try to think of everything in terms of balance and, like, you can be self-critical to where you're, like, where you're checking your ego and making sure you're still trying to do what you're wanting to do, and then you shouldn't be so self-critical that you're self-destructive and, like, procrastinate, because I have procrastinated a lot in my life, and I finally feel like I have something that I'm like consistent with to where it like I have the momentum with me that I can like starting anything is literally the hardest part. Once you have a little bit of momentum, it gets a little bit easier.
That's a paraphrase of a very famous quote. Yeah. The beginning is the hardest part.
Yeah. And that it's true. And I'll whose quote is it, but the first draft of everything is shit.
Yep. Like,
and I've
told, I learned 100 ways to not make a light bulb.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I've definitely made people not laugh as more than laugh so far, but I mean, that's slowly starting to change. I feel like I've kind of been hitting like a, in music, they'll call it the wall where you'll like be stuck at a point where you're like, fuck, I've been like, I'm like not getting any better, but I'm like, I've been practicing, I've been learning new stuff, but for some reason you're just not getting it. And then one day you'll wake up and then you'll just be at that next level. And you're like, I don't even know how that happened, but cool, I'm going to just keep at this.
Well, you woke up at 2:30 a.m. that morning. That's how that happened.
Yeah.
It's the plateau theory. Like, your art grows to a point and you just sit on this precipice and then all of a sudden something happens.
And I feel like I've hit a stride with comfortability on stage, and not that I still like think, because I still feel like I have no idea most of the time what I'm doing when I'm up there, but I know I have enough material that has worked on average that I'm like, okay, I know, like, I have a lot of structured written out stuff, but I still like kind of leave it up to the wind. Like, I feel like I have a magazine full of bullets that are jokes, and then as I'm firing them off to the crowd, if they're like, if I'm like, oh, I'll do this dark joke, they don't like it, I'll do a lighter joke. And if they respond to that, I'll kind of go in that direction and just try to, like, feel out what they're going to enjoy.
That's that finding that path. Yeah. I think we were off mic when we were talking about it. But, yeah, like, looking into the crowd and seeing a whole bunch of metal shirts, you know, you go darker stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But seeing a bunch of, like, bright pink polo shirts, not offense. I mean, my kid wears that shit. But you know what side to take your stuff.
Yeah.
And it is sometimes you don't get the costume to judge on you. You got to judge on the reaction. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, I genuinely am just trying to just figure out what I'm trying to do, I guess. And I feel fortunate to feel like I have something that's like weird and pretty off the wall to want to try and do. And I'm just like, I'm fine here. This is cool.
It seems to be working.
Yeah, so far.
It seems to also be making you think about yourself and the world around.
I never thought I would be at where I am this far. Just thinking back to, like, just hitting mics for a few weeks and then having people like, oh, yeah, you're, like, writing stuff and just keep showing up and eventually you'll get on shows probably and just stick around and, like, and I love the hang afterwards. Like, my favorite thing to do is just hang out and, like, talk and have a good time. That's all why, also why I like podcasting so much and, like,
it's a great excuse to like sit down and have a couple beers, exactly like we're doing. Yeah, it's a great excuse.
Yeah, and I have a great time, and if you're having a great time, like, you're probably doing something good, and, like, people will respond to it.
And what else is there in the world, really?
Yeah, other than people want to connect, and this is a pretty good fucking way to connect, because, like, back before the internet and all that stuff, if you wanted to really know an artist that you liked, you could catch like a couple interviews and
maybe pick up a Rolling Stone or something. Yeah.
And they're like, how Spin honest magazine. Are they really going to be in those interviews? Plus whatever the writer decides to throw in. And then
it's one of my favorites. I still own the Spin magazine of Trent Reznor, showing up in an interview and he lays out 4 cigarettes. He's like, this is how long the interview is going to be.
that's a bar move. That's awesome.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
And now like with podcasting, you can really like, get to know these artists and these people that just like really care about what they do and want to connect with other people that care about what they do. And it's cool to hear all the different kinds of stories. Like I listened to that guy, Duncan Trussell. He did a couple podcasts with his mom who's like going through cancer and stuff. And it was like one of the most couple like beautiful conversations I've ever listened to. Cause it's just like, it really captures that crazy moment of like, you're like talking to somebody for like the last time and you really want to get that connection. And it was just like a cool thing to have on record.
Well, it sounds like through your experiences, you can identify with that one in particular. And that's what I think is fascinating about talking to all kinds of different people.
Yeah.
Is that everybody has a story and most people, a lot of stories ask them.
Assume everybody knows something that you don't.
Right.
Yeah, and if you try to approach that's not mine. There's a book called 12 Rules for Life.
Oh!
Jordan Peterson. It's a really good book. I recommend that to anybody that is, like, confused about life. And it's not... He's the only person I've ever listened to talk about Christianity in a way that actually allows me to respond to it in a positive way, because he is also a psychologist, so he's completely all about science as much as he is about the... He's more of a philosopher than he is, like, religious in terms of what I take away from it. He's just, like... And his rules for life is, like, stand up straight with your shoulders back, and then one of them down... And at the end of it is, like, don't bother kids that are skateboarding, and some of them are sillier, and some of them are more, like... One of them is assume that everybody knows something you don't, and, like, always tell the truth, which... And it's just, like, obvious shit that religion teaches you, but... I fell victim to it myself, having that weird glaze of the creepy, like Catholic Church, or the creepiness of church. It totally sucks any of the meaning out of the words, but, like, you can just take it as stories and lessons that you can learn from stories as much as you can fucking learn the same lessons from Star Wars or anything. It's all, we're all telling the same
story. Star Wars is based on the biblical thing. I mean, like, well, disappeared for 33 years and the whole bit, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's crazy, and I'm glad that I have, like, an interest in it, and it has just the small lessons that you can learn. Like, you shouldn't shut yourself. You don't have to, like, oh, I like a thing from, like, I like a part of Christianity, but that doesn't make you a Christian, and that doesn't make you, like, the Westboro Baptist Church immediately.
Oh, God, please don't just, yeah. Nobody be like that.
Yeah.
I agree. I wholeheartedly like the teachings of Jesus. I like the teachings of Buddha. I like the teachings of Muhammad. Just to call out three big ones. For the most part, the teachings of the leader are reasonable things. It's how they're interpreted by the followers that tend to be the problem.
Yeah, and it's always the most extreme followers that get the most attention, and that ends
extreme
up painting
extreme always it. Gets attention.
Yeah, yep.
Extreme always gets attention.
Yeah.
So next question is, would you tell me about a defining moment?
I guess the most recent was probably the first time I got up on stage. It's kind of weird because I'm not really a superstitious or, like, paranormal kind of guy. But I had, like, an out-of-body experience the first time I did stand-up of, like, me, like, getting out of my own way in a lot of ways. And it's weird how small a moment like that...
It's a jazz term.
Yeah. Yeah, when I'm not doing very well on stage, I'll be like... I like to take Miles Davis's approach to jazz and apply it to comedy. It's about the laughs you don't get. And, like, that, if you want, anybody out there want to use that line, that's fine with me. It's just, like, some shitty throwaway joke to try and, like, save yourself.
No, it's actually a very common blues and jazz theme. It's not about the notes you play, it's about the notes you don't play.
And then, even in comedy, having a good pause can create a huge impact to a joke, depending on, like, what it is. And you've seen, like, everybody that's good plays with the silence at some point.
Yes. Well, it causes that discomfort.
Yeah.
That we were talking about a little bit.
And it's crazy because a second of silence to the crowd, to you, it's like 10 seconds. So you can really, because you're so much more hyper aware and you got all those nerves, you can really, like, play with it more. You can almost, like, relax because you're, like, on bullet time or something, all, like, slow-mo. It's interesting.
It is interesting standing there and waiting in that pause, that empty space.
And it's also weird of how because it's talking on stage, how much it gets belittled as an art form, as well as much it is like, it seems like in stand-ups, the art that's in the spotlight of media right now, just like how Eminem and Marilyn Manson were in the 90s.
I agree exactly, actually, for two reasons. A, not everybody, but the vast majority of people look at comedy and go, oh, I could do that. Yeah. But no, you can't. Like, I'm clear I can't. I got some funny shit on the outlooks on life, but it's not my vernacular.
Yeah.
But the other side is that it is respected. And I liked the Marilyn Manson and Eminem because it is kind of the modern philosophy.
Yeah.
Like, to be successful, you have to be able to look at society and what it does and deliver it to people in a way that makes them at least awkward enough, as we've talked
about. Yeah, Eminem was calling that out, like those lyrics where he's like, oh, now it's a tragedy because it's happening in a fucking rich neighborhood, like your school shootings and shit.
Because it was a blonde girl, now it's a problem.
Yeah, and it's happening in like inner cities all the time, but because like it happens in a place where it shouldn't happen, that's when it gets the publicity.
Sorry about your gated community.
Yeah. Not that I think like you should go shoot up gated communities, but it's like...
Thank you for that just in case right there. Because like, if anybody ever called us back like a Sabbath record, we'd be in trouble.
Yeah. And I think we also shouldn't forget that the world is just this like weird free-for-all that we're just in the middle of at this moment of human history. And you're only here for so long, so try and like look at the silver lining or try to have the yin-yang, the balance. Yeah.
Yeah. Finding that, well, and that's that same blue space. That's the space that you need, the room to breathe and afford it to other people. I had an experience just today, actually, with a 7-year-old kid that shows up at work occasionally. Long story, very short. But he came up and he was saying, like, here's how I'd rap to this. And I was like, oh, I don't rap. And he looked at me and was like, yeah, so this one guy was rapping, and I told him I don't like rap, so he should quit. And he's just a 7-year-old kid trying to be cool. Yeah. So I understand all this. And I looked at him and said, dude, seriously, what you really need to do is just give space for yourself and give space for him. Like, let him have space to be whoever he is. Don't tell him no.
Yeah.
Unless he's hurting somebody. Yeah. But other than that, don't tell him no. Let him have space. Because if you let him have space to be him, he will give you space to be you. And everything will be just better that way. And I've lost the circle back, but I did finish the story, so it's got to be attached.
Yeah, I'm sure they got it.
Or not. It's not the first disjointed thing. So, all right, last question then. What makes you similar to other people?
I guess that's kind of a process, too. Because, I mean, you're going to have similarities with your friends and all that stuff. But I have to, like, constantly be thinking about my material so that a room full of a bunch of different people are going to understand, like, my train of thought, which is... It makes me, like, more empathetic to... other people, and as not that I could like put myself in somebody else's shoes, but just I don't know, I'm just trying to find always what's similar about people, because now there's like so much like negativity, and I feel like it's hard for them to look on the bright side because they get so caught up in it.
And we're very divided right now.
Yeah, and something like this, like, I'm sure if given long enough, there's things we wouldn't agree on, but I don't have a problem disagreeing with somebody because it's not the end of the world and we're not going to die, and really, like, I'm not going to change it, and maybe the other person isn't either, so, but having the conversation, I'm probably going to take something away from it, because even if I listen to stuff that I don't agree with, even in the slightest, it's... You're just like, oh, okay, so somebody can grow up in this existence and have that thought, I guess. That's weird, but that's cool. And in terms of, like, bad people and bad... I'm, like, definitely going off on a tangent. But
I told you in the beginning that's encouraged.
Yeah. If we don't, like, find what's similar, that leads to, like... all this, like, social media garbage of, like, mostly negativity all the time. And whenever I think about social media, I think it's just, like, people angry while they're taking a shit. And I'm like, it's so silly. And it's, like, Twitter influences the world so much in terms of corporate America. And it's just such a dumb thing to me because anybody can just sign up and just spout bullshit and it'll have a weird effect when I bet if you just waited a few days for the next story to come out, you're going to be fine.
Somebody has to tweet that first story and the second story.
And then it's all like resharing anyway, and people that have the most emotional reaction are probably the people that are just reading headlines and then forming their opinion on a headline, because I feel like if you're going to have an emotional reaction, you probably haven't thought about it as much as you could to, like, even if it's something, if you're going to, like, debate somebody about something, you don't want to get angry because then that just makes you look ridiculous and, like, you can't handle your shit. And I think it's funny when I see, like, corporate people, like, I'll deliver to grocery stores, I'll deliver bread, and I see, like, the corporate guys all serious and, like, acting like their job is, like, the most important thing in the world. I'm like, dude, you're, like, at Fred Meyer's right now. Like, you should calm down. Yeah. I don't know.
That's actually something. Thank you. I needed to hear that today.
Cool.
Oddly enough.
Yeah. It's like, because then the day's going to end, then you get to go home and maybe we have beers, so.
Yeah, right? Cool. Like, hang out with a cool person is a terrible thing. I got to say, yeah, that was super poignant, because I hit the door angry because of my day job.
Yeah.
It's like, no, just relax, sit on the porch, sip on a beer, it's going to be fine, change your attitude, and lo and behold, it circles all the way around. Holy shit, dude. I think that's a fucking podcast point right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all about trying to not take the day job shit home with me. And I work at a pretty low-pressure place, so it's pretty easy, so. But, yeah.
Yeah, but when a bakery doesn't work, a bakery really doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely been some moments.
One failure of one thing.
Yeah. Yeah, if they don't put yeast in the dough, and you make, like, 200 pounds of dough, and it gets baked.
Heaven forbid your Hobart goes down, right?
Oh, ovens are going down all the time. Right. Like, vans are breaking down. I respect anybody that's trying to, like, run any kind of business, because it's fucking, it'll make you go gray, like, being the president.
Yeah, it will. Yeah. On that note, man, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is my first appearance on somebody else's podcast. So,
oh, cool. Well, yeah, then we'll trade back now that I know you have one. I totally want to be on yours. Yeah. I'll offer you also, I don't always remember, but I would like to offer you the second set of questions. I have a second set.
Oh, sure.
And I want to get a handful of these down and then start knocking out the second set. I think it'd be fun.
Cool. That's like a part two kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it season two, but I'm still doing season one at the same time. It's going to be
perfect.
It's going to confuse podcast listeners everywhere.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Why not? Fuck it.
It's season two. You can do whatever. Show up a second time.
Do whatever you want. Yeah.
Right. Cool. Thank you, man.
Yeah. Thank you.